Welcome to the Tin Lounge. You've stumbled on one of our short episodes called The Minibar, where we discuss current events in the travel industry. I'm Teresa, owner of Get Out Custom Travels and creator of Fan With Intention.
And I'm Corrine, creator of Travel Biz Boss and co-owner of Journeys Travel Company. We can't discuss all of the headlines, so stay with us until the end for excess baggage. We have a little announcement. One of us, and it's not Teresa, is a pain person who is going to Europe for 5 weeks, then coming home and moving just days after across the country while launching a new cruise program. So we are going to take a little summer hiatus. Next week, we do have an episode for you with Dave Meyhoffer. It's a pre-recorded episode. And then we're going to take a few weeks off. But we will be back at the end of June, and we will miss you very much.
During that break, I am hoping to just re-upload some of our previous episodes so that you guys still have some things to listen to. And these are going to be our more evergreen episodes, whether they are our advisor highlight or, you know, some guests that we've had on. It won't be news related, obviously, because we don't want to hear news from 3 years ago. So that way you guys still have some, you know, additional motivation and stuff for you to listen to while we are taking our little break. But rest assured, we will absolutely be back.
Yes.
It is a summer break. It's like up until midsummer, because summer break would be until August. So we'll be back end of June. Don't you worry.
Just need a teeny little breather to fit everything that my crazy behind is trying to squeeze into life right now. So if you want to be mad at somebody, be mad at me. Anywho, I am so excited. Teresa just went on Virgin Voyages, and I want to hear all the details because I've really only sold it a handful of times, and I haven't been on it, and I need to learn all of the. There's like a lot of different things about Virgin, so I want you to word vomit and give us all of the scoop.
I cannot wait to tell you about this because ocean cruising is not my personal favorite when it comes to travel experiences. Expedition, loved it. I love river cruising. But ocean cruising, especially on larger ships, I've never really been 100% like about it when choosing it for like a vacation or things like that. However, going on Virgin, I love it. Like I love it so much. And that's not to say there weren't a few things that I really had to learn along the way. But at the end of the day, I'm just like, oh my gosh, I could go on this all the time. And a lot of other travel advisors who've gone on Virgin, and when they, you know, prior to me going, when they found out that I had never sailed on Virgin before, they're like, are you kidding me? This is 100% up your alley. No children. Really great food, really fun activities, just all in all, it just seems like it would be 100% your thing. And they were right. It is 100% my thing. And I brought my sister with me on the sailing. And I will say though, one of the things that definitely kind of caught me off guard was the reservation system for dining, because the way they do their dining is very different than other cruise lines. There's no main dining room. There's no buffet area. And so every night is basically a specialty restaurant, or you go into a place where they call it the galley, which is kind of like a food hall setup. There's a bunch of different stations and everything is cooked to order. So that way they minimize the waste that usually comes from a buffet setting. And that's one of the big things for Virgin too, is sustainability, both environmentally and socially, which I absolutely love. Yeah. So getting on the app, and it's app-based. So for a lot of people who are not tech savvy, this could be just something that they are going to be, you know, they might struggle with it a little bit, but everything's on the app and it is easy to navigate. I did sign up a little bit late for this cruise. By the time I got on the app, all the reservations were out. So we ended up making reservations on embarkation day. And embarkation day to me on every cruise I've ever been on has been very overwhelming and overstimulating. And Virgin was not an exception. I was overwhelmed, overstimulated. And I am not the cruiser who shows up in my bathing suit and immediately ready to roll, grab a drink and walk around. That is not me at all. I am so wound up so tightly because I'm trying to figure out all these new things. Where do I go? That kind of thing. So making reservations for the restaurant on the very first day was successful, but I didn't like having to do that. So if you could get your clients to get the reservations in as soon as those days open, that would be super helpful. If you are part of the Signature Consortium, we get to have our clients make reservations with the cruisers who are in the Rockstar Suites. So that's a really big value add for us. I mean, I'm not sure for Virtuoso or Ensemble if it's similar, but that's something to tell your clients too, that can have them start making reservations early on, which is great. They have to either call it in or you have to do it for them. The app does not recognize that they are booked under a signature agency. So that's the main thing. But enough of the boring details. I just wanted to just reiterate how much I loved it. The food was incredible. It is what everyone says it is. My sister and I, we both got tattoos on the cruise.
I love it.
No, they are not matching because we have very different tastes. but we did get tattoos on the same day. And it was just a really overall fun experience. The beach club was great. I would 100% do it again and again and again and again.
I love to hear it. And it was actually like, I think my response sounded surprised isn't the right word. I am not surprised that you got your first tattoo on a cruise ship. Like that is right up your alley. Like, Oh, we got a tattoo parlor here. Let's do this.
Yeah, my sister was like, that's very bold of you to get your first tattoo on a cruise ship. And I'm like, but is it surprising? Because I feel like all I do is make bold moves. And She's like, you know what? You're right. You're right.
Yep. Not shocked. I think I was like excited. Like you said, I was like, pics immediately. So bossy. Yeah,
but maybe we should do a Tin Lounge cruise on Virgin. I feel like that would be 100% on brand for us.
I'm about to see Christy in Rome. So let me get the ball rolling.
Talk to her about that.
All right. Well, before we dive in, this episode is brought to you by Toby AI and Voyager Websites. Visit voyagersocial.ai to take Toby for a walk.
First on our list is an article from Travel Weekly, and it's from Nadia, quote unquote, Sparkle Henry. And she talks about why you should consider consulting fees. And so this has been a really big topic in our industry, continues to be, because it is very divisive. You have advisors who advertise free services, and you have other advisors who are charging fees for all clients. Yep. There's no right or wrong way. I just want to reiterate that. However, for those people who are wanting to explore charging fees, this is a really great article as to why Sparkle decided to start charging fees and how that has impacted her agency. So she says she started as an advisor in 2007, and she relied heavily on referrals and personal relationships within her small town to build her business. And she said the approach was effective, but she soon realized that she was working harder and longer hours than she ever had while her family time was shrinking. Does that sound familiar to anybody?
Oh, yeah.
And so she said it became clear that she needed to find a way to work smarter and not harder if she wanted to sustain her business in the long term.
Yep. I think a lot of advisors who end up deciding to charge fees, it's because they're at capacity and they almost need a way to weed people out. And it's such an easy way because you know if someone pays your fee, they're very serious and you're not going to walk away with nothing. So if you are on the fence or if you are at capacity, it is a great way to start weeding out the riffraff.
Well, I also think that, you know, your time is limited. And So if you are quoting somebody who has not put skin in the game in terms of a fee, and they end up taking what you've quoted and then booking on their own, that time that you spent working with them quoting, you've missed out on another client who would have booked with you.
Yep.
So that was one of the biggest things for me, is that not only was I at capacity, I was at capacity also working with people who were not serious and were just using me to shop.
Mm-hmm. Yep. She said that after careful consideration, she introduced a scheduling system for consultations into her business model, and she started charging a fee. And she says the impact on her business was profound. She increased her closing rate by 98%. And she said it enables her to work less while earning more. So she only charges $100 for a consultation to curate an all-inclusive package for up to four people to the Caribbean, Mexico, Dubai, Bali, or the US. Oh, also Africa and Europe. And then she says she may add additional fees depending on how complex the booking is. And then to do a booking for over four people, the charge is $260. And a destination wedding fee is $495 just for hotel and transfers. And then for individual cruises, she charges $55 per cabin. Totally not, like, it's just enough. Right? Mm-hmm. It's not so much that it feels cost prohibitive. It's just enough to be like, are you serious about this?
Exactly. And I think what most people will find, at least in my experience, is that if you haven't been charging fees, starting to do so will feel scary because the number that you think of in your head will be high, because anything above $0 is a lot.
Yeah.
So if you're comparing that in your head, you know, initially you might think, oh my God, no one's going to pay $100. Well, I will tell you now, when I first started charging, it was $250 for custom itineraries. That became too attainable for people because my volume was still at capacity.
Yeah.
Like, it was just way too much because people would pay it almost immediately. And I wanted it to be a number that was scary enough for people to really think whether or not they were serious about working with me. So then I doubled it. I didn't even say I'm increasing it by $100. I went and I doubled it. And
again, you bold, bold lady.
Yes. I was just like, you know what? Let's see how this goes. If it doesn't work out, I can always change my mind. It is not a decision that is permanent. I can always change my mind, but let's see how this goes. And when I say it was a resounding success, it was a resounding success because I received more clients that fit the kind of trips that I wanted to book. And there was a higher level of respect that came with being paid more. And not only that, when I told people that that was my design fee to start designing a custom itinerary, do you know there are still a handful of people that I've talked to about this who are like, that's it? That's so low. And it made me think about how I could still be charging more for my time because now I have way more experience. I have the connections. So don't let the initial number scare you, because anything higher than zero is going to be a lot. So give it a shot. If it doesn't work, you can always change it. It's not a permanent decision.
There was somebody I met, and I can't quite place them, but I just remember them saying they implemented a fee, and after the first five, they doubled it. And it started at like $50, right? And after the next five, they doubled it again until they got to the where they were comfortable. But like in order to get the confidence, they did it incrementally every five clients. So you could pretty quickly probably build up to a much higher fee. But if that feels more comfortable, there's a million different ways you could do it.
Right.
But I don't recommend, you can do it if this is what makes you comfortable, but it is hard to switch from a plan to go deposit to an actual fee. So I think some people feel more comfortable starting with the plan to go deposit that gets applied to the trip price. But honestly, you may as well just go for a fee. Most people, they're given money up front. It's like girl math, you know, like that doesn't exist anymore once it's paid.
Exactly.
So just go right for the fee if you can. I mean, it's your decision. It's your business, but it's not ideal. It's harder to switch from the deposit to the fee than it is just to go right to
the
fee.
Yeah. And then once you start with that model in mind, I also have a little blurb on my website that talks about how trips departing within X number of days will also be charged a rush fee. Mm-hmm. And I can waive that at my discretion if I wish. And I'll just tell them, hey, typically I would charge a rush fee, but I'm going to waive that for you. So it makes them feel good. And on yep. the actual invoice, I will add the rush fee and then I will subtract the rush fee. So they see the line item. So they're like, oh my gosh, I'm saving money. But I have charged the rush fee and they absolutely paid it. So yeah. it's how you present it and also the mindset. It's going to be very scary. But as you can see, while we talk about Sparkle's experience and the difference it made, it doesn't hurt to give it a try.
Yeah. And I want to talk about, I love that she included some math. Love to break it mm-hmm. down math-wise. So she mentions that occasionally air will be included in the package, but if the client wants to book excursions, dinner reservations, et cetera, that includes a travel management fee. Clients can choose a package of fees or a separate charge of $100 per hour for concierge services. And she said she averages about $600 a week in fees, which adds up to $28,800 a year. So like 30 grand added to your bottom line in a year mm-hmm. just by implementing fees. And I've seen it in action because there's people on my team who have big fat fees now and they are rolling in. I get emails from Travel Joy, money's coming, money's coming, money's coming.
Yeah. And I will also say to add to that, I think it was on an episode from Teak's podcast. I can't remember, but they talked about tiering your fees. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you want to charge a certain amount just for the design, another amount if they want to include concierge services, another amount if they want to include XYZ, that way they can customize the fee that fits their budget or that fits what they're hoping to spend. So that could be another way for you to kind of give them options and quote unquote soften the price if that also helps you mentally to yeah. embrace charging fees, similar to what Sparkle had described here.
Yeah, people like choices. So the tiers can be a great way. People particularly like three, and they're usually going to pick the middle. Like psychologically, that's just typically what happens. But you have to know your clientele. Maybe your clientele just likes simplicity. Mm-hmm. So you have to just decide what's good. And also just try something. And if it's not working the way you want, then do something else. I mean, it's all you can do, right?
Right. It's your business. You get to decide.
Mm-hmm.
So Sparkle lists the several benefits to charging fees. One, you will increase your closing rate. By charging a fee, you weed out clients who are not serious about booking, enabling you to focus your time and energy on clients who are ready to commit. You will work smarter, not harder. Implementing fees enables you to work fewer hours while earning more money, and you'll have more time to focus on providing high quality service. You'll also grow your base of luxury clientele. Charging fees can attract a higher end client who will be willing to pay for your expertise and personalized service. You'll increase your financial stability. It provides a steady stream of income that is not reliant on commissions, adding to your yearly income. And it will increase your stature in the eyes of your clients. Charging mm-hmm. fees emphasizes the value of your expertise and the personalized service you provide. And she says that her reviews and exit interviews are overwhelmingly positive.
I've never had anybody push back, and it was so scary for me to start implementing fees. And I don't charge fees across the board, but when I do, I never get any pushback.
Mm-hmm.
So she ties it up by saying she encourages you to consider implementing consulting fees into your business model. It's been a game changer for her, enabling her to work less, earn more, and provide a higher level of service. I think people sometimes spread themselves so thin too mm-hmm. that they start like risking their reputation. Weed them out.
Yeah.
All right. Our next article is from Travel Age West. Teresa, do you ask for reviews?
I do have a post-trip survey / questionnaire that I send to people with my welcome home email. And I do say that I would appreciate if they would leave a review on Facebook.
Okay.
Because there has just been, I don't have a Google business page officially set up because they do ask for additional items that I just haven't gotten to if you're a home-based business.
Yes.
Because if you don't have a storefront, there's some additional things that you have to submit. And I have only gotten to part of the steps and I haven't finished the additional required items. So that is a pow-pow for me on not getting there. But I do ask for them on Facebook. Not every time, though, but for most of the trips, I will.
Okay.
What about you?
I don't at all. I don't even want them. I like my word of mouth. That's what's worked for me. But I do see the value in this article. You know, maybe it'll change my mind, but I'm probably too old and bitter and jaded at this point to do it. But the name of the article is called Google Reviews Are Powerful. Here's how to optimize them. The article says, every click, every search, every review on Google, each holds the potential to catapult your business or leave you in the dust. In today's market, your online reputation isn't just a nice to have, it's a make or break factor that could be costing you tens of thousands of dollars in missed opportunities. Well,
I do want to jump in real quickly and say that I do ask for them, but whether or not they actually go in and do the review is another matter. I mean, they will fill out typically the survey / questionnaire for me so I can have some feedback. And I ask in there as well, are you comfortable with us sharing your testimonial, et cetera. But not everybody actually takes the time to go into Facebook and to leave a review. And also my clients tend to be beyond the Facebook users age. So it might not be the best platform for them to use.
Yeah. The article says that building your brand with Google Business Profile and optimizing it with customer reviews is not only easy, it is available at no cost.
It is hard enough. I just want to point that out. There are enough walls in place for you have to complete it.
Google Business Profile is a free marketing tool that influences the way a business appears in Google Search and Google Maps. Quite simply, having a complete profile improves your ranking on Google when users search for services nearby. I will say this, one of my team members just recently got into a little bit of a pickle with Google, and I'm not sure where it stands now, but because she doesn't have like a business address, she actually lives in Ecuador, they like pulled, and she had worked really hard to build up like 50 reviews.
Oh,
and they
pulled
everything down. And she told me they had it back up temporarily, but I'm not sure where it stands. So I think you have to tread carefully if you are more of the digital nomad type.
Right.
But this makes sense. So Jen Lee, who is from TPI, said that Google has trained the customer to ask it about things near me, such as Starbucks near me, and it only makes sense that consumers are now asking it for a travel agency near me. She says, you want to optimize your Google Business Profile so you can be the local agency that shows up in search results. So that's what made me think of it. Like, I guess you got to have a location of some kind.
Yeah. I mean, that part is the part that kind of tripped me up a little bit because I am home-based. I don't want my address as the one listed in Google.
No.
So, you know, one of the things they wanted was like a video of, you know, the outside of my home with the street and, you know, all this stuff. And so I'm like, I'll just get to it later because I do have an online presence in the form of Instagram, my website, and also the Facebook profile. So like I try to cover those bases. But this article says, think of your Google Business Profile as a digital storefront. A basic profile will include your hours of operation, location, local phone number, photos, a website link, and perhaps most critical, customer reviews. And Dr. Tarika, who was on our podcast, she's quoted as saying, Google reviews are an excellent way to provide social proof of your services and expertise. They can also serve as a great way to attract business and close the sale. Mainly because According to Capital One Shopping Research, more and more Americans are placing their confidence in online reviews. 84% of consumers say they trust online reviews as much as personal recommendations. And among those ages 18 to 34, the trust in online reviews is even higher at 91%.
I guess I'm doing it wrong.
I mean, whatever you're doing is working for you, Corinne. And
tell it to my bank account.
I think that is something to consider is if you're doing something that is working great for you, where you are at, you are very happy where you are in terms of volume, in terms of referrals, in terms of, you know, business and the money that you're making, don't stress about doing anything different.
That's right. And that goes for all things. Mm-hmm. Don't start telling yourself you have to do all the things, or because this article says that maybe you're missing out on tens of thousands of dollars, that somehow, like, not all things work for all people. And if it ain't mm-hmm. broke, don't fix it. So Amy Leon, another TPI lady, is quoted in the article saying, all my business is referral based and approximately 30% of my business comes from new clients finding me by way of my Google business profile and reading through my reviews. She says, I think the conversions are so high for two reasons. For starters, with Google, business owners have the ability to reply to reviews but cannot delete them, so prospective clients know that they're getting the good, the bad, and the ugly. Additionally, Google makes obtaining information about a business quick and easy. With just a few words in the search bar, you can locate a travel advisor in your area, learn about their expertise, and quickly get an idea of how they treat their clients by reading the reviews, and equally important, seeing how the business responds to those reviews, especially if there's a negative review tucked in there. Which I mentioned on a recent episode, something I loved about TravelJoy. We haven't done anything with this, but somehow we still got a slam of a Google review. And it was for one of my team members. And the guy had actually not booked and traveled on his own months before. And I don't know what, like, we think maybe she sent out a newsletter and he was on the list and it made him think to go and write this terrible review. And then I was able to see the entire conversation. Everything was in TravelJoy. He said she didn't think outside the box. She didn't try to meet his budget. She quoted three completely different destinations to him. I mean, she really, everything he said she didn't do was very obvious that she did do. So I had to respond to it. And of course, I did it very professionally, but I was like, I am looking at your correspondence right now. And she did this, 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 and this. I'm really sorry that we weren't able to work with you, you know, whatever. But that was like, that kind of reinforced my decision not to go looking for reviews. But mm-hmm. I mean, we have nothing to be afraid of. It's just a door I've never opened. And so mm-hmm. like, why open it now? But point being, if you do get a negative review, it's like you have to find a way to find the balance between not just being totally defensive, which I wasn't, but it was hard because I was like, you son of a gun. like you literally wrote the opposite of everything that went down, mm-hmm. but you have to professionally and kindly respond. And you should also respond to positive ones so that, you know, it looks normal. Like you don't look so defensive. Right. I think actually it says something about that in this article as well.
So this article also talks about how to get Google Business Profile reviews. And it says, clients are more likely to trust an advisor with a track record of satisfied travelers, but how exactly should advisors go about obtaining glowing, enthusiastic reviews on their Google Business Profiles? Andrea Miller, a senior travel advisor at See It All Travel, she sends a welcome home email to her clients that expresses a genuine interest in their opinions, and she says it has proven to be a successful strategy. She says, not only do I ask very specific questions about their experiences, I also include a link to leave a Google review. I've found that showing I'm genuinely interested in what they have to say is more effective than just asking for the review. Most of them understand that my happy clients are the number one contributor to bringing new clients to my agency, whether by direct referral or public reviews. And Dr. Tarika says, something similar. She follows up with her clients by phone or email after their vacations. She provides clients, both new and old, with a direct link to her Google Business profile after the exchange. She says, I ask each client for a review, even if they are a returning client, because each vacation experience is different. I also let them know how their review helps me in my business, since this makes the request more personal.
Yeah, clients actually do want to help you. If you say, this feedback is so helpful to me, and like, especially after the pandalarium was winding down, I was always saying, like, this feedback is so essential right now as everything has changed in the world, and it really helps mm-hmm. me inform my decisions and who to partner with going forward. They love to like be a part of your team.
Exactly. They want to be part of your success. And if you include them in your success story, it helps them feel even better about themselves, which is something that I think is a psychological need maybe for people mm-hmm. is just to know they contributed in some way. Jen Lee says, speaking about timing of when to ask them for a review, Jen Lee says, if I were an advisor, I would time my request with when I know my client is flying home, because I know they're on Wi-Fi checking all their emails. I'd say, hey, I know you're in the air. How did it go? Now you're conversing with them. And once the conversation is rolling, she suggests letting the client know how leaving a review of their trip can help other travelers make smart decisions. The request, however, needs to be specific.
Yep. So she's saying it's not enough to say, just leave me a 5-star review. And she recommends that you use prompt questions, which is usually my advice too for people who are struggling to get reviews. People are really busy. If you can give them a couple of prompt questions or even include an example of a review so they can just follow the model, they're going to be a lot more likely to do it. So she said some sample questions would be, what was a problem we helped overcome for you? What surprised you about hiring us as an agency? And what was the biggest highlight of your trip? I actually never thought of that first one, but very smart.
Yeah, I think especially if you have clients who go to you and say that they've never worked with an advisor before, maybe a question would be, why did you decide to reach out to me and how do we help you on your vacation? You know, something along those lines, because then anyone else who is on the fence about hiring a travel advisor will read that and say, oh, I'm feeling similarly, and this was how this travel advisor was able to help. So that could help prompt something in their head to reach out.
Yeah. Then we dive into how to handle negative reviews. Oof. So if you're putting it out there to ask for reviews, you have to know that not every review you receive, whether organic or solicited, will be exactly what you hope for. Negative and inaccurate reviews are inevitable, but they can prove to be growth opportunities. So the key is in your responsiveness and how you address feedback. So kind of what I was just talking about.
Miller of See It All Travel, she says, it's imperative that you respond to each review. Thank those who leave a positive review in a way that lets everyone reading it know that you are familiar with that reviewer and value your relationship. That way, when you respond to that rogue negative review from someone, your previous responses lend a level of credibility that you wouldn't have otherwise. Furthermore, no matter how ridiculous that negative review is, always stay professional and matter of fact, not emotional or retaliatory.
Don't call him a son of a gun.
I will say too, Brianna Glenn, who is a luxury travel advisor out in California, I remember being on like a think tank call with her, and she said, if you have done your best, like your very best and everything, you shouldn't be afraid of reviews. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't be afraid of the feedback people are giving you. However, just, I know between the two of us, Corinne, and I sent you these memes on Instagram where it says, when I asked for feedback from you, I meant compliments.
Save the other stuff.
Yeah, save the other stuff. But you will get, you know, you can't please everyone. You will get someone who will just have some random complaint. And it may not be your fault.
Right.
It may be something that happened on the trip where they had a fight with their significant other or something happened and then they just want somebody to blame. So in those instances where, no matter how ridiculous, as Andrea says, or negative, address it in a professional way. So this article says advisors should respond courteously, addressing concerns directly and showcasing a willingness to learn and improve. By handling negative feedback gracefully, advisors demonstrate professionalism and integrity, earning the trust of potential clients. Jen says, first off, thank them for their feedback. You should never say I'm sorry in a public comment unless you did something wrong. And in most situations, that's not the case. If you have done something wrong, be okay with just attacking it straight on and be the bigger person. If all people see are all positive reviews, they almost get a little skeptical. So you've got to see a negative review here or there. That negative review has the power to turn into a positive review by the way you handle it. And I think one of the most important things is don't say I'm sorry. And unless it's really your fault.
Don't apologize or empathize, don't apologize.
Yes. And I wouldn't say I'm sorry if I don't mean it because I'm not a liar. So I'm never going to say I'm sorry to something that's not my fault.
Right. If it is your fault, you definitely should say I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Otherwise, do not take responsibility for something that has nothing to do with you because it can actually affect you like liability wise if you do that.
Exactly.
The article wraps up saying, in essence, the way you manage your Google reviews can make all the difference in how potential clients perceive your business. By embracing feedback, responding thoughtfully, and leveraging positive reviews, you can establish a reputation that attracts and retains clients. You may even win over those who have never worked with a travel advisor before. Well, I'm already tripping over my tongue today quite a bit, but are we ready for excess baggage?
Yes, let's do it.
All right. It's time for excess baggage, which is a speed round of headlines that are pretty self-explanatory, so you can learn a lot in just a couple of minutes. According to Travel Weekly, Riviera River Cruises has partnered with two travel companies to assist travel advisors in making transportation and hotel arrangements for their North American clients. Tour Crafters and Auto Europe will be able to assist travel advisors when making a flight, hotel, and transfer arrangements for their clients. Another one from them says that Host Agency Review's annual travel advisor survey opened up on Monday, April 15th. The survey delves into a plethora of data points on advisors, including income, fees, relationships with host and consortia. This year, Host Agency Review said the survey will include an increased focus on travel advisor media consumption and use of technology. Travel Pulse reports that Saudi Arabia is pushing tourism. It's introducing new luxury properties blending tradition with modernity. Two chains in particular, Red Sea Global and Neom, pace the effort. Travel Agent Central says that following an assessment of its current business model, Holland America Group is no longer a USTOA active member, effective April 4th, 2024. The U.S. Tour Operators Association announced this. Accordingly, Holland America Group's brands, Princess Cruise Line, Holland America Line, and Seabourn Cruise Line, no longer participate in the USTOA $1 million Travelers Assistant Program. I guess I didn't edit that one pretty very well. Another one from them says that Carnival has added a series of new updates to its online booking tool for travel advisors, GoCCL Navigator. The enhancements streamline the booking process, providing travel advisors with the tools and resources they need to maximize efficiency and improve their overall experience to support their business and income growth. And our high note today is also from Travel Market Report. Delta Airlines plans to drop baggage recheck on arrival to the U.S. Let's hope this becomes a trend. That's it for excess baggage.
Just a reminder that all the articles we've referenced today can be found in the show notes. Please remember that we didn't write the news, we're just sharing it.
If you've enjoyed the episode, please subscribe, leave a review, and/or share the show. Also, head on over to our Facebook and Instagram pages, which are both under the Tin Lounge. We'll link them in the show notes.
Once again, next week we will have a new episode with our special guest, Dave, but we will be on a little summer break until the end of June. So we will not see you in person next week. We'll be back.
We'll see you soon.
Yes, we'll see you so soon. If you want to follow along with what we're doing during the summer break, especially Corinne, head over to Travel Biz Boss. I feel like you're going to be posting on there. Is there another Instagram handle that you will be posting on during your adventures?
It'll probably mostly be Travel Biz Boss. I'm terrible on my personal account.
So head on over to Travel Biz Boss on Instagram, and you can find me at my agency account, Get Out Custom Travels. Just to, you know, if you want to say hello and let us know how you're doing, or just see how Corinne's getting on with house hunting in Spain.
That sounds a little gross, but I'm very excited.
All right, y'all. If you have any questions, comments, or just want to say hello, you know where to find us. We'll see you all when we see you.
We'll miss you.
We'll miss you a lot. Cause no one can do it like we do it, like we do it, like we do it. Cause no one can do it like we do it, like we do it, like we do it.